The content of this podcast should not be considered financial or investment advice. All interviews and discussions are opinions only, and the podcast has been created without taking into consideration the listener's financial objectives, financial situation, or needs. Listeners should obtain independent advice before making any financial decisions. G'day, this is Barry Fitzgerald, Garen Perrow columnist for Stockhead. Welcome to another edition of the Explorers Podcast. Today we're catching up with a well-known name, Mount Ridley Mines. Trades under the code MRD and has a market cap of a little more than $15 million. Now, this is a nice easy one in the sense that the company's flagship project is the Mount Ridley Rare Earths Project, about 50 clicks northeast of Esperance over there in WA. It's, as I said, a rare earths project. It's in the clay category, which is interesting, given this market seems to have a fascination with hard rock rare earth deposits in Australia, whether they be in the West Arunta or the Gascoyne. But here we've got one nice and close to lots of infrastructure, decent grades, and not too far off coming out with a mineral resource estimate. Now, to bring us up to speed with what Mount Ridley's up to and what to look out for, we have Guy LePage with us. Guy's a director of the company, and of course he would be known to all Stockheaders as a geologist, former stockbroker, and now a director and responsible executive at Perth-based financial services provider RM Corporate Finance. So with that, I'll introduce Guy. Guy, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me on, Barry, and a pleasure to be here.
Guy, things started changing for Mount Ridley a couple of years ago. It was there in the part of the Fraser Range looking for the next Nova. But you've come across an interesting rare earth project called, focus of interest at the moment is called MIA, that's M-I-A. So just bring us up to speed of what you think you're onto there.
Well, we found this extensive rare earth mineralization in the course of doing a review of all the data that related to the nickel exploration, which started back in 2014. So like a lot of companies, we went back and looked at all the drill results and found pretty extensive rare earth mineralization right throughout the tenement. So, you know, the last 18 months has been, you know, drilling out some of the better areas. You know, we've got 8 or 9 prospects. MIA looks, you know, pretty high grade, and hopefully looking to stitch a resource together there in a couple of months.
Now, Guy, the drilling to date's identified this swarm of what's called elongated thick clay units.
Sure.
How extensive are they?
Well, we've got a mineralization over, you know, the majority of the tenement. Everywhere we're sticking a hole down, we seem to be getting mineralization. You know, you've got a sort of 35K apparent strike, which is pretty well mineralized, but, you know, not all of the rare earth mineralization has favorable metallurgical properties. So a lot of the exploration now is really being directed towards that mineralization that we can beneficiate, you know, screen out some of the mineralization, try and upgrade it. So that's why the focus has more recently been on the MIA prospect.
Right, okay. And you've been doing some beneficiation test work. So when you say simple screening, how simple is it, and what's the sort of uplift you're getting?
Well, it's really a sort of gravity separation. I mean, it's a little bit more than that. It'll need to have some flocculants and other treatment, but the beneficiation plant looks like it's a bit of a goer. We're getting upgrades in our last announcement, which we put out on the 6th of July, upgrades of anywhere from sort of 130 to over 200%. So, you know, that makes a lot of difference when, you know, you've got a resource grade that might be in the range of 1,000 ppm. Mm. You know, the beneficiation, you know, we're able to put through grades of up to 6,000 ppm. Mm. So, you know, we're not going to average that across the whole prospect, but I think there's, you know, if the feasibility proceeds and we have a flow sheet that looks promising, you know, I think there's a good opportunity to have a pretty long mine life where we've got a head grade after the beneficiation of, you know, over 2,500 ppm, which I think gives the project a pretty reasonable chance.
Yeah, certainly does. Right up there in the clay-hosted world, that's for sure. And you have some neighbours who've been doing some interesting work. So we're starting to see a bit of a, you know, quote-unquote province emerge here. I'm thinking of is it West Cobar Metals, and there's one or two others there.
That's right. There's a few players. E-Metals have done a bit of work. ODET 6, obviously, recent float from last year. So I think it's, you know, the potential of the provinces, you know, in the many billions of tonnes. I think what the market is looking for is a better understanding of the treatment options and more specifically what reagents we can use and how much they're going to cost. So, you know, we mentioned before the podcast Meteoric, who look like the, you know, the leader in this market because they can use ammonium sulfate, which is a pretty cheap reagent. The clays in most of the clay-hosted mineralisation rare earth is not amenable to treatment with ammonium sulfate, or if it is, it's only small proportions of the project. So the majority of the explorers have been looking at using either sulfuric or hydrochloric. And in our case, we seem to be getting better results with hydrochloric, and that's not dissimilar to the findings of ODET 6.
Right.
So, that's the sort of next phase to demonstrate that can work in a first in a lab and then in a commercial setting.
So it's all about the metallurgy. So you're in the diagnostic test work sort of phase now.
That's right, and I think you know, I'm a little bit more optimistic. What we've been seeing in the last 3 months. You know, the problem with hydrochloric acid is it is a more aggressive reagent. It's going to require more, you know, higher spec plant equipment, obviously being more corrosive than sulfuric acid. But the benefit is we are getting very good recovery. So the other challenge is neutralizing the acid. So, you know, look, there's a few challenges there, but, you know, from what I've seen to date, you know, I'm a little bit more optimistic that, you know, the hydrochloric pathway might work.
Yeah. And that's the route they use in southern China, which kind of invented this clay host.
They're more of an ammonium sulfate.
Oh, because
there's a bit of debate about ionic clays. Most of the Australian deposits, and, you know, if you look at Makutu, I don't actually think they are ionic clays. I think they're just a product of supergene weathering. You know, most of them aren't amenable to ammonium sulfate. The ones in China appear to be. Obviously, the management of their mining projects, the rehab, the environmental constraints are less onerous than what we're dealing with here. But it's a bit opaque as well because there's not a lot of production data coming out of China. So, you know, we're not sure whether those deposits are in fact economic. You know, they're sort of a more of a vertically integrated economy there. So it has been hard to get sort of benchmarking because there are no clay deposits in production around the world. There are a couple of flow sheets out there and a couple of mining studies, but there aren't any actually in operation.
Right, so at the end of the day, you have to come up with a flow sheet that works for your deposit.
Correct. So, and I think the market's got it right. I think the market's sort of looking at this and thinking, well, you know, we don't know whether these grades are high or low or whether this has any chance at all. And, you know, obviously you've got Lynas in production, you've got Hastings in development. There are precedents, you know, you've got Mountain Pass in the US. There are quite a few precedents for rare earth hard rock production, but not clay hosted. So, you know, if we can crack the nut and crack the metallurgy, you know, we could have a very significant industry. And this is not just Mount Ridley. There's other players out there with pretty interesting projects. So, you know, there's a lot at stake here. So, you know, the next sort of 6 to 12 months are going to be critical.
And one thing that I noticed about the project is that some of the clay deposits we're seeing elsewhere in Australia, you know, 1 meter sort of intersections from near surface, fair enough, near surface, so easy to mine. But this one seems to have imparts some very thick, you know, 36 metres, 15 metres, 12 metres. Is that going to be working in the favour of the project in the long run?
Well, it's certainly going to build up the tonnes pretty quickly. And, you know, the stripping ratios on a life of mine basis, you know, assuming this actually makes it that far, you know, going to be pretty attractive. So, now there's a lot of good things about this project, location, access to sort of power, water, road, port, and obviously the, you know, broad zones of mineralisation and the big width. So, you know, hopefully, you know, that's enough to sort of push it to the next phase and give us enough encouragement to go to a mining study.
I see from ASX announcements that the company's been drilling resource definition type holes, 81 drilled to date, more than 4,000 metres, 30% complete, assays early August. So we'll start to see a news flow as you work towards your maiden MRE.
That's right. We should have quite a bit of data coming out in the next few weeks. And we should hopefully be back on the ground in mid-September, but it has been pretty wet down there. I think they had 30 mils a couple of days ago. So that might delay us a bit, but hopefully we'll be back on the ground drilling out this resource, you know, and hopefully report that resource, you know, November, December this year.
And once that is done, can you roll straight into scoping pre-feasibility studies, or will there be more work to do?
We probably can. I'll probably reserve my judgment till I actually see the resource, because we probably need to get a fair bit of this mineralisation into indicated. It is pretty broad spaced. It's a huge area. So, you know, subject to that and subject to the met work, you know, we may roll into a study. It really depends on the confidence around the flow sheet. You know, I've been working with quite a few of the labs and a few engineering firms. So, yeah, there's quite a few dots to join before we push the button on a scoping or a PFS.
But certainly working towards that endpoint.
Yes.
Okay. Because I think some of your neighbours, is it West Cobar, it might be the 86 one, they've actually established a resource. So, yeah, it's a developing story in that part of the world.
It is.
You've touched on the infrastructure there. Obviously be an advantage compared to something in the West Arunta or the Gascoyne.
Yeah.
But I was just wondering what, and I'm over in the East, and there's been a lot of interest in what's been going on there with heritage laws, et cetera, et cetera. I was just wondering what the native title access position is for this project.
Well, look, we've got a very good relationship with the local communities. We've done a few site clearances recently. You know, the dialogue's been fantastic. The communities there have been very positive. We've identified a number of sites in the area, so you know, we're working to sort of preserve them and avoid them. Obviously, the imminent scrapping of the heritage laws, I don't think that was necessarily going to affect us, but probably had more effect on the region. So I think the scrapping of that was pretty positive.
Okay. So the land itself, is it open country or is it farmland, or what's the main use?
Most of it, or the majority of it, is Crown land. It's sort of, you know, marginal. You know, a lot of it's sort of Plyer Lakes and sort of salty. So from that perspective, we're not likely to encroach on any farmland, because it is, as everyone knows, some of the highest value farmland in the country.
That's something that intrigues me. We've seen some serious government support for Iluka with a refinery, and we have the one being built just outside of Kalgoorlie by Lynas. Mm. I'm just wondering, I know it's early days with the project, but looking forward, do you see the situation where you might be supplying those plants, or do you think this is all export market?
It's a bit early to say. I mean, it's likely our flow sheet will contemplate the production of maybe a concentrate, maybe a carbonate of some description. Whether those concentrates could be treated in the back end of Lynas's plant, or whether Lynas's plant could be reconfigured for it, I don't know. We have had very early, you know, preliminary discussions, but I think once we have a flow sheet that actually, or in a mining study that actually, you know, looks like it has potential to reach production, I think that's when the government and Matt Ridley and all the other players get a bit more serious about what they're going to do with it. I mean, one of the issues is almost all of the technology around separating out rare earth concentrates is in China. So that's a bit of a, you know, if we want to be value adding and refining this material, there's a lot of work to do to, you know, get to that level of understanding.
Mm. One thing is clear, though, the support from Western world governments is there for the right sort of proposals.
Definitely. I mean, you obviously saw the there's been a bit of pressure on gallium, China putting restrictions on export of gallium, you know, and you could see that extending to neodymium, dysprosium, praseodymium, terbium, some of the heavies, rare earths that are obviously valuable. So, and you're seeing similar supply constraints in copper, nickel. Clearly, you know, Norilsk being a big player, so there's going to be pressure everywhere. And I think while rare earth markets have been a bit soft, once that tightens up, I think you'll see the governments start to step in and take more action.
Well, you were talking about the heavy rare earths there, and we mentioned Lynas there before, and they said the other day they're on the lookout for the right sort of clay-hosted deposit because there tends to be a weighting towards the heavies,
yeah,
which the pricey ones that get used in magnets. What's Mount Ridley's sort of heavies mix or magnet mix?
It's about 25% magnet rare earth, so it's relatively high. It's a fairly high value project. Most of the value in these things is, you know, people talk about the basket of, you know, basket prices, but most of the value is really with neodymium, dysprosium. So we're, you know, in a reasonably good position from that perspective.
Which is one of the attractions of clay-hosted deposits,
yeah,
that Lynas itself has been touching on. Okay, now there has been a hint in the past. I'm not sure where the company is with this, but potential for a primary source in basement rocks at deeper levels. Is that something you're pursuing at the moment, or that will wait for another day?
We're seeing a sort of north easterly trending high grade zone within MIA, and you'll see some of those results up around the 5,000-6,000 ppm.
Mm.
So there may be some hard rock potential, or there may be, you know, it could either be depleted in the clay zone or it could be enriched. So it's hard to know, but we'll put some deeper RC holes down and maybe a couple of diamond holes down into the basement and see what we get.
Okay. And finally, just on the rare earths market, what's your take on it at the moment? It's been a tough opening months of the year.
Well, it has been tough, and, you know, base metals have been under pressure as well. You know, we saw, you know, a few of the big Chinese property players defaulting on payments. So, but I do see that turning around. I mean, there's still a fair bit of supply coming out of China. So the rare earths, particularly the heavies, have been in oversupply. So it might take a year or two to wash through that. And I think there was a bit of anticipation of more production coming online, but I don't necessarily see that. So I could see the market tightening in the next 12, 24 months.
Yeah, because every day another EV hits the road and they put up another windmill somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay. All righty, let's bring it together and give investors a real idea of what they should be looking out for in the next 6 months or so.
Well, the next 6 months, I think, are going to be critical. More metallurgical results coming out the next 30 days. And that will probably focus on, you know, the ability to beneficiate and also leach. So I think that'll be important. The next, I guess, milestone would be recommencement of drilling mid to late September, probably close to late September given the ground conditions. Moving into sort of November, maiden JORC resource, so that will probably focus mostly on MIA, maybe Tyrrells and a couple of other prospects. You know, that obviously depends on our drill density and what the guys doing the JORC resource are prepared to sign off on. So they're the major milestones. We are going to do some deeper drilling, look at the hard rock potential. I think that's, you know, probably speculative. moving into next year, if we've got some confidence around the flow sheet and it's coming together, you know, there is a possibility of pushing the button on a scoping or a pre-feasibility study, but that's probably a little bit further down the track.
So there you go, folks, an emerging rare earth story in a well-serviced part of Western Australia, and a strong news flow all inside a $15 million company. So with that, I'll thank Guy for his time and good luck with it all.
Thanks, Barry, and I look forward to talking to you again.
Cheers.